This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network. TalkSport. Powered by fans.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
The TalkSport Fan Network is proudly supported by McDelivery, bringing you the food you love. McDelivery brings a top-tier lineup of food right to your door. No matter the result, you'll always be winning with McDelivery. So the only thing left to say is, you in? Order now on the McDonald's app and you can also get reward points delivered too. So that ordering today means some tasty rewards for tomorrow. Only via app at participating restaurants. 18 plus. Rewards registration required. Points only on menu items. Delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
Jepson's there, Billy in. A goal, Chris Billy, Huddersfield Town. The most famous goal of Chris Billy's life.
Is this the moment for Lee Fowler? It is. Take your place in Division 2, Huddersfield Town.
Champion Steve Simonson's boots now. He's missed. Steve Simonson clears the frame of the goal and collapses in a heap of tears. Huddersfield Town are promoted.
Christopher Schindler has a chance to write his name in Huddersfield Town legend. And he takes that chance!
Hi everybody, welcome to episode 210 of the Andy Takes a Chance podcast. Not in a mood to do any gags or jokes or anything like that as well, because I think everyone else is as pissed off as I am really on about this weekend as well. And yeah, thanks to Magic Block for sponsoring us, and they are available to buy drinks from in the Huddersfield Town Centre, home for Town Centre, and go on website at magicblock.com and get yourself some beer and some goodies. Because, yeah, we all need some beer or something a bit more stronger than after what we witnessed yesterday and that as well. John Midnight, John and Colin, welcome, guys.
Hey.
Right. Let's get out of business. I'm not asked about, you know, formations, low blocks, anything like that. He named an unchanged team, which I could not believe, to be honest with you. Could not believe that after what happened in the last game at Bristol. I thought he needed freshening up. And yeah, I don't even want to dissect what went wrong, to be honest with you. We got absolutely smashed 4-0. The crowd, as I left the ground at the fourth goal, you're not fit to wear the shirts, echoing round. Sheffield Wednesday have won today. Birmingham drew, which was almost like taking the piss, really. So the result that we needed was there for us, but we couldn't even win. And obviously, another massive fold again, 3-goal in the last, I don't know, what was it, 10 minutes and that as well. But rather than kind of talk like we normally do about this happening in the first half and that, how are you feeling, guys, as we stand tonight at 8:45, being an Huddersfield Town fan? I'll come to you, John, first.
To be perfectly honest with you, I'd say I'm just like the players. I don't give a fuck anymore. I said last week that I thought we'd go down, and all the evidence pointed to the fact that we'd go down because we're a bad team.
Do you think they don't give a toss, John, or do you just think they're just not good enough for a bit of both? I keep hearing this, they don't care, and they don't. Do you honestly believe that? They don't. That not everyone.
To be honest with you, I've played in teams. I've played in really, really bad teams. I've played in all right teams. But yesterday, what I was watching was it was so reminiscent to just playing in so many Sunday League and Saturday League teams where you've just given up. And that's not the first time that's happened this season. As soon as Josh Koroma put that very, very presentable chance into the fucking upper tier of the Panasonic, then the arse just fell out of the entire team. And it's happened so many times this season. Their first goal went in. It was a decent finish. And to surrender like they did afterwards is just... to me, it's completely unforgivable. And there's no other way in my mind that you can describe that. They gave up. They literally gave up with 10 minutes to go, and they've given up before. And I'm sick and tired of them all. I really am. I think Brighton writer came out as well and heavily hinted to it as well. He said in his post-match comments, he said, the will wasn't there today from some members of the team. Now, that's a tacit admission that people just weren't trying or weren't doing what they were supposed to be doing. I mean, there's far too many players on this team that are playing for themselves. And I just, you know, I'm sick to the back teeth for them. For one of the goals, I think it was the second or the third goal, Michael Hurricks just wandering back, just having a nice little jog back. It's just, I don't know. I'm just, this team gave up a long time ago, I think, personally. They're not mentally strong enough. We've been given so many opportunities this season to react and to come back stronger and to come back better. Last week when Bristol City were awarded that dodgy penalty against us, that was a real opportunity. That was a massive opportunity. You used that injustice to spur you on and go get 7 points or 6 points out of the last nine. But we don't have the mental fortitude for it. We really don't. We're weak. We're pissed. Listen, I could go on all night talking about how much this team are just a...
The only thing I could say about John, Colin, John says there, we gave up. I sat in that seat 2 weeks before on the 93rd minute against Millwall. We won. We fought to the end. That's not a team that's giving up. So why do things change so quick, Colin, with our team? We've gone from that, everyone on the sidelines jumping on, you know, as manager and we're all together and blah, blah, blah. Then we go to Preston and that. But do you think, Colin, that the kick in the teeth, and it was a huge kick in the teeth at Bristol, was just one kick too many for us? How could that happen yesterday when they had nothing to play for?
I'll be candid. I actually think that Millwall win, while we battled to the end, I think that papered over a lot of cracks. Because I said to my dad as I left that game, we didn't play particularly well. While we did create stuff, it didn't seem coherent. We were playing a 4-4-2, and yet our passing patterns that we were playing weren't set up for a 4-4-2. I think Brighton Wright has come in and he's putting a lot of square pegs in round holes. I don't think the players know how to play how he wants us to play. But then we go away to Preston. We look all right for 55 minutes. We make a mistake. But we've seen this with the last 2 years with this team. They've got zero confidence. You know, we're on six or seven managers now. This squad hasn't been good enough for years and years and years. Well, you know, that bar the one season that Corbrand got a tune out of us, we've stunk the division out for years. And I think it's a culmination of a lot of factors. I think this year, a lot of muddled decision-making by the club has just infected the entire culture of the place. And I think all our chickens are just coming home to roost now. I was quite excited by Brighton Wright's appointment, but I don't know what he's trying to do with this team. I think he's trying to play a system with players that aren't suited to what he's trying to set them up to do. And I think that's why Worthington did so well, is that he got the players playing to their strengths. I don't know what Brighton Wright is trying to do with us. And I think we just, as soon as, like you say, we hit a bit of adversity, heads go down, we go crazy. But Preston away, 1-1. We're looking good for a point. He should be shutting up shop. Instead, he brings off Matos. And I've seen the start of something today that there's something like eight or nine goals being conceded since he gets subbed off in games. Why is he taking off the man that's breaking down the opposition and opening this up through the middle of the park? Our midfielders offers absolutely zero protection to our back four. They're all right defenders, but our midfield is absolutely abysmal and it's killing us.
Happened again yesterday, didn't it? I mean, we were almost like a carbon copy, wasn't it, and that as well. But where did you stand, Colin? Obviously, we've not spoke to you kind of before on here, but after the Millwall game and what were coming up and kind of the feel-good factor, obviously a false dawn now when you look back on it, but did you feel at that time that could get out of it, or have you kind of,
I've had a bit of a feeling this season. I think the omens have been against us. And I'm not an overly superstitious type of person. I think you make your own luck. But in the promotion season, there were a lot of things that went for us. You know, fixtures fell for us. We played teams at the right time. Results went our way in other games at crucial moments. This season, that inverse pitch has happened throughout, particularly over the last few weeks. Decisions not going for us. Just not getting the bounce of the ball, bar that Millwall game aside. So I felt for a long time that we're heading out the league. I think Matt mentioned on the podcast here a little while back, there was a game where I think he the same as me, seemed to be a bit worried by a particular performance. It might have been the West Brom game at home, where all of a sudden it felt a bit, this is turning the wrong way here, and I'm a bit worried. And so it's come to pass. I think the players haven't bought. It's clear that they've not bought into Brighton Wright's methods. It's abundantly apparent. And I think he's made some very strange in-game decisions. Preston away, we were good for a point. Subs on a striker, we get hammered 4-1.
But Colin, the players haven't bought into Darren Moore's methods. The players haven't bought into
Yeah,
I'm sick of the players, mate. I'm sick of them.
100%.
I'm buying into anyone and that as well. And you know, it's not a real structure or agenda to this podcast. A bit like our team, but let's get on it. You know what, mate? Like, we've all probably played five a side in this time. You know when you've got that player that's like greedy and like just walk past, and you know he's going to shoot, and you're kind of running your balls off on that as well to like, could like help the team and stuff as well, but this person's going to do his own thing, and he just kind of just comes to a point where he either gets sorted out in house, doesn't it? Where someone bends someone up against the wall, or someone swears at someone, or other people just like lose the will to live and that as well. And let's kind of bring the elephant in the room into the room and that as well. Delano Bergstrom, unbelievable, and it's like that was just an unbelievable moment. Again, how many times have we seen that? It looked like that he kind of got like selfish ways out of there a little bit. I thought it improved, certainly at Preston, where he would kind of be more of a team player, but unbelievable though. There were Caroma, Radoni there, he'd gone around the keeper, and I just, at that moment, some of the players, oh my words, and you can't have people like that though, can you? Just like selfish people doing that as well. And he's probably done more than anyone, more than a few, sorry, to keep us in the league. But he's just, that kind of stuff is just absolutely draining. I don't think I can remember seeing a town player like just kind of put a pin in a balloon like he just does. And he's done it and again and again and again. And it was bad to see, wasn't it? When you see, you always feel as a town fan that everyone should be on the same page, and you're seeing a guy blatantly that is not.
I used to call Dwayne Holmes the momentum killer. And I know he scored a lot of goals and stuff for us, and he was decent in our, I was going to say promotion season, but in our playoff season. But Bergsorg really is the momentum killer. You know, at least with Dwayne Holmes, you know, we'd be on a good attack and he'd just punt the ball out for a throw-in or something. But Delano Bergsorg...
Is it thick or is it just selfish? Why is he doing that? Again, why? Why is he doing that?
I would say it probably smacks of arrogance myself. There'll be loads of coaches that he will have worked with in Germany, wherever he's been before, that will have said to him, you need to look up and pass to a teammate. And there's a reason why he's at Huddersfield Town. He's clearly a talented player, but he's probably far too arrogant for his own good. that's what it smacks of a grown person to play like that. He just
seems an odd guy, Colin. It's like, you don't do social media, you told us earlier on, but last night he's putting a picture of himself like on the pitch and that. And I just think, mate, after all that's happened today and all what you've done, there's no way you do that. You just lie low. I mean, it's just incredible. It's almost like, I'll do what I want. And I've kind of liked his, some of his, come on, we need to be all behind, together. But it's kind of ironic, isn't it? Like, the together thing. He puts them we're together, and what he just does is not together. He's just, I'll do what I want. And it's, the last month or so, it's crippled us, mate. And I think there's only so many times, you can put up with that. And it's just, it's soul destroying, mate, isn't it? And it's not even just the team are down, his colleagues are down, the crowd's on him. And it absolutely sucks the life out of the stadium. And I'm trying to, honestly, Colin, it's not been the same as it since that Blackburn game. I know he's been injured. I don't know if it's sliding doors, but it's a bit big to say that. But that Blackburn game, when he was really good, obviously got you with a disgraceful tackle that got done on him. And since he's come back, he's just been more armed than good, mate.
Yeah. Yeah, he's played within himself a lot, hasn't he? Bar the odd little bits here and there. I think, like you say, that Preston away game, he put in a great performance and kind of helped bring other players in. For me, I think he's always looked more like an impact player off the bench, when I think it's like Sunderland away where he gets the winner there. And there's been a few other games. I think we've had to play him a little bit out of necessity because I think, either the players have been injured or, and I'm saying injured in inverted commas, one or two players possibly. The fact that we've got a lot of strikers that are injured that we've signed this winter tells its own picture. But yeah, for me, I think he's probably a bit of a knobhead, and I think a dressing room can only carry one knobhead at a time. In our promotion season, it was probably Rajiv Van Laparo. But I think when you fill the dressing room with good characters, the knobhead falls into line. I think we've got more than one knobhead. When you've got two knobheads together, they rub off on each other. Sounds kind of wrong, but I think you get more than one dissenting voice in the dressing room, and all of a sudden, they start bringing other dissenting voices with them. And I suspect that we've got more than one knobhead in our dressing room, which is why we are where we are. Yeah. I think it was apparent after we started getting more knobheads in the Premier League years, and we know who all they were. But you start to get these little cliques, and when the chips are down, those sort of bad characters, those bad actors sort of start to bring everyone else down. I suspect that's probably what's happened in our dressing room. I think Birkzog firmly falls into that category for me.
Johnny Gillespie in the pod was sat near Jonathan Ogg yesterday, about three or four seats down away from him and that as well. And he says he was absolutely, thunder in his face and that as well. This was a guy, obviously, Mr. Huddersfield Town, and it hurt him, mate. He's absolutely raging inside and that as well. And honestly, it's embarrassing, isn't it, when it's like a 35-year-old, or 36 soon. And he was so needed in that game, it were untrue. He just to probably get a few of our lads in line, never mind, stop the Alamo, which were like the Swansea midfield ripping through us. I think that there were so many depressing things about history, but for me, the most depressing thing was, it looked like we knew Swansea were going to have the ball, but the way we try and pass and play football, it looks like we've just learnt the sport. It looks like guys have rocked up, right, guys, this is a game called football. And what you do is you do this and you do that. So let's give it a go today. And it's embarrassing. It's like they were so comfortable on the ball, so better in possession. This is a guy who's had them since January and that as well. And they weren't a fluid passing team. They were obviously before, but Michael Duffy wasn't great football and that as well. But and I had to remind myself that they're mid-table. They're not even a good side in the division. And they made us look absolutely amateur, man. The first half was just so bad. And Brighton Wright, I mentioned it to be fair in the press conference, but we're there 0-0. And normally when it's like, when we've been leading a few games, haven't we, at half-time recently, I'm thinking the other team's got to be better. But this, I thought, surely we can be better than this. And what I wanted to see at half-time, I don't know about you guys and that as well, we got them after an hour, but this 60 minutes wasted there. There should have been subs on there straight away. There should have been subs on there straight away. Birkshaw should not have stepped on the field in that second half, in my opinion, he should have been off. And the stuff that I just couldn't get my head around as well, Broder Spencer, I just don't get it. I do not get it. I get maybe that Edley, you know, more for his kind of forward process, but, you know, put Spencer on the right hand side, like where he's more comfortable at and that as well, and maybe take Pearson off. I just couldn't get my head around that. And some of the Brighton right and stuff I get, you know, the players is, they just have message after message after message, but some of the stuff I just didn't get in that as well. And I would have had Ely on at half time and that as well. And I don't think I'd have taken Matts off because we saw against Preston what happened there. It just like the place went to SHIT, but it was just maybe he's just at a loss to it all and that as well. But I have to say, I feel that Brighton Wright, it's obviously not his fault we're going down, but I expected a bit more from him, to be honest with you, mate, and that as well. And I was disappointed just there with him. We wasted 16 minutes, but obviously, you know, the players are just so poor. But yeah, just I wanted to see more action, mate. And yeah, who knows? But we should have done. I thought we should have done a lot more earlier. Do you agree, Colin?
Yeah. Well, I have a confession. I didn't actually go to the game yesterday. I was on a stag do in Manchester. But I think everything you've kind of described, it appears that game after game after game, his substitutes are either not happening, or when they do happen, they seem to be negatively impacting the team more often than not. I'm the same as you. I expected a lot more from him given his pedigree. I can't get my head around a lot of his decisions, the shape that he's picking us in. He's been a big disappointment. Not too sure where I'll be that bothered if he goes in the summer, if I'm honest with you. Based on what I've seen so far, I think you need to have a degree of pragmatism regardless of what division we end up in. Clearly going down to League One, and he's kind of not shown that he can be in any way pragmatic in his tactics and the players that he's putting in certain positions. He seems to see a different game from us in the stands. That's always a worrying sign for me. So,
I'd kind of disagree about the pragmatism. I just think his pragmatism hasn't worked. So I had a bit of an issue yesterday. I was watching the game, and Matt Glennon was talking about it, and he was saying, you know, we've had bugger all possession and we've not really tried to attack. We've just sat back and defended. And then there were parallels made between, you know, this time last year under Warnock. And this time last year under Warnock, all we did was sit back and defend. You know, we had 16, 17% possession at home against Blackburn. The difference is that in the key moments, we took our chances. So that game against Blackburn's the perfect example. We scored from a set piece. And then I think Rodoni scored as well, which was a sort of difficult chance. Whereas in this game, you know, we were pragmatic. They had one decent opportunity in the first 60 minutes that was saved well by Nichols. And Josh Coroma misses an unbelievably good chance. And Delano Bergsorg does what Delano Bergsorg does. I kind of got cut off there really because of my internet. But, you know, Bergsorg, I sat and listened to you guys on the podcast after the Stoke game. I wouldn't have played him. I honest to God would not have played him. He cost us 2 points against Stoke away. He wouldn't be in my team. It's kind of like you said, Colin, you can have, is it the New Zealand rugby team had that famous saying, no dickheads in the team? We have too many dickheads in the team. And if Bergsorg had taken his chance, or if he'd have passed it to someone and we'd have scored, and Coroma had have scored, then we'd be talking about a complete different game. We'd be talking about a 2-0 win, or a 1-0 win, or whatever it was, and it'd be the perfect pragmatic win. I get that it's not pretty, but I think it's this thing. With Warnock last year, it worked, and he's the messiah, and everything's brilliant. But if it didn't work, then is he terrible? Or is it just moments, little moments here and there, just go against us? Last season, they all went for us. This season, they're going against us. Don't forget, last season, Reading had a points deduction as well, which significantly helped us in our bid to stay up. But yeah, my issue with Brighton right here, I suppose, would be two issues, twofold. So firstly, playing Bergsorg. I don't understand why he continues to play Bergsorg. I gave him the benefit of the doubt. I thought Healy, Ward, Radulovic, maybe they can't play a full 90 minutes. But honestly, after yesterday, I'd rather a fucking, I don't know, a 6-foot dildo up front rather than fucking Bergsorg. Honest to God. I'd rather put anything up there. And then my second issue with Brighton, right, which I do think is a really legitimate issue, is we sacrifice control in the middle of the park in a bid to try and win the game. It appears to me like we're going to a 4-2-4, and we put Kasumu and Radoni in the middle of the pitch. Now, Radoni's not going to boss a midfield. Kasumu's a good tackler, but he's not a good passer of the ball. So whenever we've gone to that 4-2-4 formation, well, there's one game, I think, where Reece Healy was playing in number 10 and then filling in the midfield. We've lost all shape and we've conceded tons of goals. So I think, yes, the players are giving up to that. The players certainly gave up in the last 10 minutes yesterday, but Brighton Wright is not helping with this shift in formation, just ceding control in the middle of the park. I don't understand that.
Yeah, I mean, we're all pretty predictable. Jamal Lowe, to be fair, good sub to come on, but he had all the time in the world to stroke that in the bottom corner, and he really just felt like Tyson Fury just like going around every fan there and just absolutely just smashed someone in the stomach and that as well. We were absolutely done. The one thing that I really noticed, apart from like 300 Welsh people losing their absolute marbles in their way, and is just our guys just sunk to the knees. We're almost like Coventry had lost that penalty out today. We were done. We were absolutely done. Saw the Thomas on his knees, Helic on his knees. And it was just like unbelievable. This is like, I'm thinking, you know, we've still got time to turn it around. And
this is what's wrong with this team. It's, I touched on it
earlier. The thing is though, John, it's happened though. There's been so many knockbacks, to be fair to them, and that as well. And that last Saturday at Bristol were horrendous, mate. But and I questioned whether that after the Preston, you know, with what happened there with the penalty and the fold at the end, could we come back at Bristol? I said we'd lose 4-0 on another podcast, and we played really well, but. And then you're thinking, Jesus Christ, that is the blow of all blows. But it just looked like that had just killed us, mate, from last week at Bristol. And I didn't, the first half were lifeless. The place was poor. I mean, all week, I don't know what you guys felt, but the club were trying to lift the fans, you know, videos every day, you know, get behind the guys. But I just, it's the first time I've really felt it's not been mutual. You know, yeah, you're going to get a lot of stuff back, and I'm not calling you on Twitter anymore, but like the posts were coming out and they were just the predictable message back. It's the first time I've felt the fan base is like, no bollocks, we did all that last season. You've let us down again this season. We can't be arsed. It's almost like, shut up and do some talking, you know, yourself on that as well. And I just felt that all week. I didn't feel that. You know, I mean, I get some stick for something like my sub thumping post. Come on, here we go. You know, let's put it all behind us and stuff like that as well. And I know again, Brighton Wright's out again and kind of pleading again today. And he's like, come on, we still could do it and blah, blah, blah. But I really felt that even like most of the fan base were just like, no. Maybe they're giving up, some of them are giving up a bit easier, but I just didn't feel that mutual love. So he went in there and I didn't think it was rocking whatsoever, really. And that as well, it was really quiet. It was just like, look, you know, turn it on, town. We've heard this so many times. It was such a strange thing. And obviously, you had the vitriol at the end with it, not fit to wear the shirts. But it was just a strange atmosphere yesterday, Colin. It's almost like a boxer. What I'm trying to think of that boxer that always just, he fights all the time. And it's like, it's kind of, I don't say we're brave and that as well. But it's Chisora, that's him. But to be fair, that's been a bit of a slut on him. But you know what? It's almost like, it's just we're wheeled out, we're there. It's we're never gonna like do anything brilliant and that as well. But it was a strange one for me all week leading up to it. I didn't feel that, you know, obviously Neil Warnock's a bit different because he's like the conductor of the orchestra, but Brighton Wright is a good guy, but I just felt even though he was coming on with his messages and all, I just didn't feel that love. And the town centre were pretty empty before. I thought they were fair enough crowd, but not Brighton Wright were expecting a full house and they were nowhere near it. And I just feel the public of Huddersfield, the fans of Huddersfield said, and obviously the talk of the season price going up, we just said, lads, up yours, you do the talking on the pitch, and they didn't do it.
No, I'm with you. I feel that exactly the same myself. And I think since the start of this season, I've questioned a lot of the decisions that Nagel has taken. I think from my point of view, I've really fallen out of love with the club this season. Myself and I generally have been one of the ones that has generally stayed positive. I was defending Phil Hodgkinson for a long time until he became indefensible. You know, I've always kind of been that person that's tried to be a little bit more sort of look on the bright side of things a little bit. But it started, I think there's just been lots of bad decisions after bad decisions after bad decisions that have come from the top. And I know we'll touch on this, but I think Nagel, I've cut him slack because he's come in and he's put his money in, but he's been incredibly badly advised time and time and time again. And that muddled thinking has just permeated the entire club. You know, down to the people that they've got rid of off the board, to the players that they've not recruited, the players that they have recruited, the managers, everything. It's a mess. And I think as a fan, you're scratching your head thinking, how can I get behind this club when this is what they're serving up? And like, I'm not a director of football, but and I don't know as much about the inside of the game as football as even you guys will do, but it was abundantly apparent to me that Darren Moore was a really poor appointment. I stopped watching the club after he was appointed because I knew he'd be a catastrophe. And I know a lot of other fans felt the same. I've come back in for watching us since sort of Worthington and Brighton Riders come in. But if me, who is generally, like you, a bit of a tub-thumping type of person, sees the positive and everything, and if I'm feeling like this, it's just years of fatigue at this, and it's just bad decisions coming from the board rather than anything else. You know, it's not down to kind of a lack of passion from the fans and whatnot. It's just chronic bad decisions, and I think it's just fatigued everyone. And bearing in mind as well, everyone's got their own stuff going on. It's not been an easy 2 years for a lot of town fans outside of supporting the club, with cost of living crisis and everything else going on. Football's meant to be escapism. If nothing else, it's actually just another bit of misery for everyone, isn't it? And I think it's real, like you're pointing to, because I think it's just all come to a bit of a head now.
It has, John, and Colin were right there. I mean, obviously, in the preview pod, Dom had a big rant against, you know, Kevin Nagel and that as well. And he seems a good guy, John, but, you know, ultimately, we're probably heading into League One, mate, under his stewardship and that as well. And it's the first time we've had a foreign owner, John, and it's been a tough old time, mate. And he's never really recovered, has it, since with the Warnock thing and that as well, and the clash there, you know, in the press conference of Warnock and that as well. And it just made me really jealous today, like seeing Danny Rowe. And you've got to say, for Wednesday, you've got a great chance of getting out of it now and that as well. I mean, to like come back from what they did, what, there's 17 points behind everyone, I think.
It's amazing. As well.
But they've kind of done what we've done the opposite. I mean, someone made a good point. So obviously we had Warnock going into the season, but Warnock had the fans on board. That's the key thing. And I think they were united front with behind Warnock. People would back Warnock, whatever he did and said and that as well. And so, well, maybe it wasn't like the full players buying in, because we've got a set of players who just feel like they can do what they want when they want and that as well. And Warnock kind of did, got the best out of them and that as well. And I still think, someone had a good point there, I think fair enough that there probably was still, even going into the Warnock season this season, that there was still a few that has not really bought into it, but obviously got a tune out of them the last 12 games last season. But Rowe's kind of got the players on board, the fans on board, and it's powerful, mate. And they're rocketing up. Their form must be like top eight. We've done the opposite, though. We had like a guy who had like the fans on board, who, they're saying this because, again, I'm not sure, but you pretty much guarantee safety, although it's a dangerous thing to say with a bunch of jokers that we've got in our squad. Okay. But it's like, but we kind of blew our like culture, didn't we? And that, well, we kind of blew what we had like near Warnock. And They obviously, Cisco and stuff, or am I? Is it just, there's obviously a lot more to it than that, but I just couldn't help look and think, hang on a minute, we had a leader of our club like they've got, and we let him go.
Yeah, I mean, to be honest with Nagel, I think obviously he wasn't coming into the club from a position of strength. You know, we nearly got relegated to League One last season. We had a load of jokers that were brought in as well. We had friggin' Anthony Knockout and all those sort of players knocking about. So we weren't in a position of strength. So I think his first mistake, was actually keeping Warnock on, because I think it was a brilliant opportunity to get a new manager in and go in a new direction and just completely press the reset button from there on in. Whether that man had been Darren Moore or not, Obviously, I hope it wouldn't have been Darren Moore. But then his second mistake was getting rid of Warnock. You don't keep Warnock for 6 or 7 games and then get rid of him, because we've already had a Warnock pre-season. We've got Warnock, you know, Ben Wiles and stuff have come in. So, you know, at least keep him till January. And then if you're going to replace him with a far better manager than Darren Moore. Because when Warnock went, whoever was going to be the next manager was always going to be on a hiding to nothing, because Warnock had the fans behind him and stuff. And the fans were very annoyed that Warnock went. So Darren Moore comes in, and Darren Moore has got the personality of a flea. Like, he's got no character, no nothing to get the fans on board. So he's fighting a losing battle from the start. And also, something I forgot to mention, we nearly got relegated last season and we significantly weakened the squad in the summer by getting rid of so many players. That summer transfer window last year was absolutely diabolical. But anyway, beyond that, so there's a couple of mistakes that Nagel's made. Then we get to January, and our issue, a notorious issue under Darren Moore's tenure, is that we haven't had players available through fitness. People have been injured. So what do? We go and sign 4 people who are injured. And then we bring them in. And then it's clear that nothing's changing under Darren Moore. And instead of sacking him when we probably should have sacked him after Blackburn or Plymouth or even before, we wait. Kevin Nagel goes on BBC Radio Leeds and says that there's absolutely no way that Darren Moore's leaving. He's his man. And then, I don't know, 6, 7 days later, he sacked him. And it's just been a catalogue of errors from start to finish. And I think David Hartrick and Stephen Chicken said it, you know, when a new chairman comes in, they're going to make mistakes. But Kevin Nagel's made a lot of mistakes. 5, 6 big, massive mistakes. And we weren't in a good position anyway. So it's obvious that we were going to go down. You know, we didn't have much margin for error. And we've just made mistake after mistake. And then what you're saying about Warnock and getting rid of someone who is a leader. The decision to get rid of Warnock right now looks absolutely bizarre, because we're probably going to go down by 4 or 5 points. And do you think Neil Warnock could have got us 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9 more points than Darren Moore could have done in that time? Absolutely. Absolutely. So it's just, I don't even know what the biggest error is that Kevin Nagel's made, because there's just so many. And there's so many little things that annoy me about him as well. And, you know, him and Carmichael Dave were coming out talking about getting Delano back in January. And I said, oh, Delano's going to be absolutely game-changer when he comes back. Well, that sounds to me like two Americans who watch American sports all the time. It's all about the individual. They watch basketball, where an individual can change the fortunes of the team completely. And these are the people that are running our club. And they know the square root of F all. They really do. And you know, there's part of me that at times I have been incredibly positive. I've stuck up for Darren Moore to my friends, and I said, you know, Kevin Nagel's put his money where his mouth is in January and stuff. But, you know, next season, I've heard a lot of people saying, oh, we'll absolutely piss that league. No, we won't. Not with this current squad. And if last summer's anything to go by, we'll have another weird summer. Brighton Wright will probably walk away. That was a vibe I got off him the other day when he gave his interview to Oggy. So, you know, do we trust Nagel to make the right decisions again? I don't think so. There's no evidence that he's made a correct decision yet.
No, nightmare, John. And Collins, before we take a break, mate, I remember I got a Blackburn last year and a couple of lads couldn't wait to get to the bottom of the stand. And we had this banner saying, Bromby out, it said. Said Bromby out there. So he's gone. See you later. We were in Championship, Lee Bromby. Okay, some bad decisions, but I think we were at Wembley, weren't we? 90 minutes from final. We like a limited budget. In comes Mark Cartwright calling as his replacement. So the guys, we want Bromby out. We want Bromby out. Bromby out. Bromby out. He's gone. Mark Cartwright's come in. What's your thoughts, Colin?
I remember being, before I got rid of Twitter, I do remember posting, I was sceptical of his appointment because his track record was poor. He took Stoke from, he was appointed at Stoke while they were in the Premier League, and oversaw the appointment of Mark Hughes, who had built one of the worst squads at QPR, full of mercenaries that were famously toxic. He brought him in as manager. And yeah, they did all right for a little bit, but recruited really, really badly. And then basically Stoke still haven't recovered from his tenure. I think what they did see is that he did do some good in terms of building their academy back up. But bar Tyrese Campbell and one or two other players, I'm struggling to name anyone there that's done anything particularly well and made much of an impact on their first team out of that academy. I mean, one of the players out of their academy certainly made a hell of an impact on our team in Edwards, who is he's in there with the Alex Dyer Hall of Shame.
Colin,
as a town player, he's awful.
Sorry to butt in. Kevin Nagel, and I remember in court, he says Mark Cathcart overachieved in January. Overachieved, said Mark Cathcart in one of his video diaries, with what he's done. It's incredible.
It's been abundantly apparent to me since we've dropped out of the Premier League that our midfield has been lacking in players, and we've got the occasional player. We were very lucky that we had a good, great young player in Lewis O'Brien come through. Lewis O'Brien was probably the best midfielder in the Championship 2 years ago, which is why we got all the way to 90 minutes from the Premier League again. He made players like John Russell look like a better player than he actually was because of his industry. Carroll Eiting was a decent sign-in. But I am really struggling to think of many decent midfielders that we've signed over the last few years. And it was apparent that we badly needed to strengthen midfield with some ball-playing midfielders. All that we've signed are players that can either break up play and pass sideways or fall over at a sneeze. Radoni could be a good player in a good passing team, but he's too soft. We've got good players like good young players like Matty Daly and Scott High, who with a bit of a beefing up might actually be Championship standard. But like, why isn't there a director of football looking at those players saying, hit the gym, lads? Because Scott High can pick a pass. He's just too soft for the division. He can't take hits. As a director of football, you need to be looking at this is our deficiency. We need players that are physically strong enough to stand up to other teams in this division. Preston away, I'm sure one of our goals for 2-1 was one of our players, Ben Wiles, I think it was, that got knocked off the ball really easy, went looking for a foul and they broke up the other end and scored. Like, our director of football should be spotting this. Me as a layman in the stand can spot this. Why can't he? It's his job. Why are we recruiting a 20-year-old from Chelsea who's a converted winger to play centre midfield for us? Granted, he's actually been one of his better signings, but our midfield badly needed. That, for me, was the one part of the team that needed fixing more than our front line. Because what's the point in having strikers if they haven't got chances? If we haven't got the ball? We don't have the ball. We can't pass 5 yards. So for me, I'm going on a very long rant here, but I cannot stand Mark Cartwright. The fact that he was working out in America before, after losing his job at Stoke, tells you everything you need to know about him. He's clearly not up to much. And given that there's going to be a lot of jobs that will go down at Town for backroom staff when we get relegated, he would be my first one to get rid of. He's absolutely atrocious.
Amen. Colin, on that point, we'll just take a little bit break and we'll be back in a moment.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Cozzy, what's your favourite away day?
Matt, it's got to be the City Ground at Nottingham. Just old school stadium, you're right near the pitch, great atmosphere. But there's nothing like playing at home. The same goes for McDonald's. Maximise your home ground advantage with McDelivery. You in? Order now on the McDonald's app.
At participating restaurants, 18 plus, serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
There we go. The words of wisdom from me and Matt. Now, just before we move into the next section of the podcast, it is Cozzy against the world, and Cozzy is struggling because he's on the back of two defeats, one against Pods, one against the man on the pod, John.
Yeah.
Is this week's Cozzy be the world?
When are we going to hold this bold man responsible?
It's the competition which is taking everybody by storm. It's Cozzy versus the world, and we're back in part two, where Cozzy this week has jumped in Bold Force One and is headed just down to Huddersfield International Airport and taking a quick taxi to Linthwaite, where Mike awaits him. So, how are you doing, Mike?
Yeah, good, thank you.
Excellent. So, you've put your head above the parapet and you've said that you want to challenge Mr. Richard Kosmala in Cozzy versus the world. So,
Matt, it's like looking at mirror, this mate. And
if you look at the, younger than you, give over.
If you look at the Opta stats, Matt, as well, my record against bald guy with glasses is hugely disappointing. So yeah, the omens are not good today for me.
Right. Okay. So if you're not familiar with the rules, what it is five questions akin to five penalties. You can choose easy or hard. If you choose a hard and you get it correct, you get 2 points. If you choose easy and you get it correct, it's 1 point. And no rebounds. So if Cozzy gets the answer wrong, Mike doesn't get a chance to score with a rebound. And the same goes the other way around. So, question one. What we usually do is we'd usually do a coin toss or a rock, paper, scissors. We'll do a rock, paper, scissors on screen for those that are listening. Unfortunately, I'll talk you through this. So, on three, one, two, three, and then if you hold up your rock, paper, scissors to the camera, and then we'll see who gets to go first. Right. One, two, three, go. Cozzy wins. Cozzy's gone scissors, and Mike went paper. So, Cozzy, do you want to go first or second? Take your penalty first or second?
I'll have a ball, Matt. I'll put Mike into bat first.
Right, Mike. So, as the guest, you also get to choose the subject matter at hand. So I gave you the list of things prior to coming on here. Not the questions, Cozzy, before you get too carried away, but just the subject. And what
you get you carried away?
Yeah, I'll go England noughties and home for 1 point to start.
Ooh, here we go. Right, okay. So just make sure I haven't asked these questions before. Nope, I have not. So, Mike, do you want an easy question? Is that what you mean?
Yeah, please.
Right, okay, this is an easy one. This Icelandic attacking player had lots of success with Chelsea and played almost 200 Premier League games for the Blues.
We aren't letting you finish, Matt. This should get a point.
You said in 7 minutes.
1-0. Exactly. 1-0 to Mike. Cozzy, are you going easy or hard?
Jeez, I think I'm going to have to try and go out and put a bit of pressure on him after that.
Here we go. This Zimbabwean forward scored 3 goals in Portsmouth's Goalfest 7-4 victory against Reading. The incredible total of 11 goals make it the highest scoring game in Premier League history. His many goals for Pompey secured him a move to Manchester City, and in his debut for the club, a Manchester derby in 2008, he even became the match winner.
Bloody hell, this is tough. And Mike's nodding, so he knows it. He's getting into my head here. I don't like these mind games here. Shit. As soon as I mentioned Zimbabwe, Matt, I thought Peter and Love, but he never played for City. No chance. It's not Sean Gorter, is it? He's not Zimbabwean, was he?
No.
Wasn't he? No. Wow, I'm absolutely... I'm screwed here, mate. It's a no-go. It's a no-go, mate.
Do you know it, Mike?
Yeah, I think Sean Gorter were Bermudan, one of Naki Wells' nationality. But yeah, it's Ben Jarney.
It is Benjani, but unfortunately no rebounds, so it still remains 1-0 to Mike.
Benjani, is that 15 years ago that? Jesus.
Yeah, 16 years ago. Flies, old boy. Right, Mike, easy or hard?
We'll go hard.
Right, this could extend the lead. This American forward scored his first goal for Fulham in their 1-0 victory against Liverpool in 2007, which secured the Cottagers' survival in the Premier League. He was also the first American to feature in a major European final.
I'm going to go Brian McBride.
He's straight in again. He's shot his load too early, cos he. It's not Brian McBride. Well, they did play for Fulham around that time as well.
Is it Clint Dempsey, is it?
Clint Dempsey. There you go. Cozzy, easy or hard?
Ooh, you know what? I thought we were going to get bad here, and now let's give me a bit of art that. Wise men say, I'm going to have to go. I'll go easy, try and get back confident, mate.
Okay. This lightning fast attacker has scored more Premier League goals for Aston Villa than any other player. The Villa Park terraces would regularly ring out his chant based on the melody to Karma Chameleon. A little bit of Ozzy Rioki for a point there.
So fast player in a car. Wow. This is an easy one and all, Matt. Are you sure I've read the wrong one? Fuck. You didn't mention a year, did you? You just said Karma Chameleon.
Fast. A year. I think so. Did 2009 not get mentioned? Hang on.
Wow. This.
He played for Aston Villa from 2005 to 2018.
18 years, Jesus.
Think of the song, come on. Ba 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 ba.
It's not coming anytime soon, mate. We're done on that for me. Mike, can you?
Yeah, it's like Bon Lahore.
I'll only accept it if you sing the answer.
Gabby, 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 yeah. Gabby, like Bon Lahore.
13 years for Villa. I was watching him on Talk Sport this morning. A bit of a meme.
She's really dour, isn't she, on Talk Sport?
Were they that long? God. Row.
Right, Mike. I believe, is that how many penalties is that each now? I really should start counting these. Two each, isn't it? And Mike is winning 1-0, I believe. Should keep score as well, shouldn't I? So this is the third penalty. Mike, are you going easy or hard?
We'll go hard.
So to stretch it out to 3-0. This right-back played more than 300 matches in all competitions for Everton. Nevertheless, he never succeeded in scoring
Tony Hibbert. For his
club. It is Tony Hibbert, and that is 3-0. Cozzy?
I've no choice, mate. I've got to go hard.
This is another right-back as well. This right-back scored in Chelsea's 3-0 win against Manchester United. Years later, as a Birmingham City player, he was booed by his own fans due to their team being anchored to the foot of the table. The following summer, this Dutchman moved to Rennes in League One. In League One, in this French League One.
Is it Mario Melchior?
It is, because he's back in the game, Mario Melchior.
Wow.
3-2. Penalty 4, Mike. Easy or hard?
Hard.
Okay, so this Nigerian defender played in 228 Premier League games. In the 2006-07 campaign, together with his fellow centre-back Julian Lescott, he was one of seven players who were ever present in the Premier League. That
Joseph Yobo.
My, this is on fire. I haven't had a Scooby on that.
It is Joseph Yobo. So, Cozzy.
Got to go hard, mate. Keep up with him. I'll try.
What is it? 5-2, isn't it? Right. This South African is his country's most experienced Premier League player. He also scored Everton's 1,000th goal in the league in a 2-1 victory against his old club, Tottenham, in 2012. Oh, this is an easy one, cos.
Don't do it. Listen up. Bloody hell. I don't...
He's a South African.
Yeah, repeat it again, Matt.
This fine, South fine. African... is his country's most experienced Premier League player. He also scored Everton's 1,000th goal in the league in a 2-1 victory against his old club, Tottenham, in 2012.
Can't be hard, wow, I can't get it. Is it not Pienaar? Is it Steven Pienaar? But I don't think it's him, is it?
Yeah.
Is it?
Cozzy hanging on by the
screen. I didn't remember him playing for Spurs, but okay.
Yeah, right. Okay, so the score is...
Good Aussie game, isn't it? Good for fans, this.
Right, last penalty. Mike can...
I'll go hard to try and win it.
Oh, Mike. It's going to be pointless then when you've got it right.
All right, I'll go easy then. Keep viewers gripped.
No.
This hard-working Swede had great feet. Despite his considerable physique, his sublime ball control was showcased in style during a Premier League match in 2010 when he scored a goal that The Guardian later declared to be the Premier League's best goal ever.
Marcus Allback.
It is not.
Ooh.
This is not an easy one either.
No, I'm sure you're getting them mixed up, Matt, because my easy one was like that. So read it out again, Matt.
Hang on. This hard-working Swede had great feet despite his considerable physique. His sublime ball control was showcased in style during a Premier League match in 2010 when he scored a goal that The Guardian later declared to be the Premier League's best ever goal.
Did it say Swedish player?
Yep.
Balls, I was going to mention John Carew, but he wouldn't know.
I've got it now, but it's... No.
Who is it?
Elmander.
Yeah, Johan Elmander. He scored that goal. Was it against Wolves?
It was for Bolton, wasn't it?
Like a Bergkamp goal, it would be really good, wouldn't it?
Can you imagine right, shit-housing now? I've encouraged Mike to go easy so that he keeps interested that if I go hard and win it. But
shall I ask Mike what the hard... Right, the hard question on the same piece of paper there.
Yeah, go on.
Was, this dynamic player secured promotion to the Premier League with West Ham in 2005. The following year, he helped the team advance to the FA Cup final where the Hammers lost after penalties. He started his career at Wimbledon, and following his time at West Ham, he switched to Aston Villa, where he played more than 100 Premier League games. If you can get that, Mike, then he screwed you over.
Yeah, I know it, but go on.
Go on, if you know it.
Oh, this is my question.
No, this was what was on the other side of the easy thing for Mike.
All right, so this don't count, yeah? But
yeah, it doesn't count.
It's Nigel Riakoko.
It is, so there you go, Cozzy. If you'd have picked hard, you'd have won the game. Right, because
it's like one of those quizzes. Right, okay. Mate, I'm going to have to go hard. And the biggest shit-housery win this, of history, this, mate, if it happens. It's a disgrace. I feel bad. But I haven't got it
back yet. Doesn't this pull your level? I think this pulls your level, doesn't it?
Does it? Right, okay.
This Bulgarian winger played over 100 Premier League games for Manchester City and Bolton combined. He was once sent off for kicking Leon Osman in a City defeat to Everton in 2007. It subsequently earned him a 3-match ban. He fell victim to the influx of new players under the new ownership at the Etihad. And in 2010, his time was up at Mancini's City, and he moved on to play for Bolton Wanderers.
He was a good player, this guy, and I've totally forgot his name. I remember him, but I don't remember his name. I think the dream is over. I'm going to raise Mike's hand, but just hang on one sec. Bulgarian. Oh, balls. Does it end in off?
Funnily enough, yes.
Yeah.
Oh, stop it. It's gone, mate.
Right, that's Cozzy versus the world has gone on the road twice, and it's two defeats for the bear.
I made the bald man cry.
The bald man has been held responsible, and Mike comes away.
What was the answer?
Martin Petrov.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was good. Yeah. Athletic flex. So basically, yeah. Matt, next week, don't get someone with bald, wears glasses, and knows everything about football, mate. That is the remit for next week's show.
Well, next week, coming up, we've got Brian McDermott to take on Richard Cusmala. But no, Mike, thank you very much for coming on.
Cheers, guys.
A good victory for you there.
Wow.
Thank you.
And another defeat, John. Nightmare, mate. But you know what? It was a better effort than last week against you. But losing's losing. What did Mama Dali say? Show me a... Was it?
Show me a good loser and I'll show you a loser.
I'm turning into a loser and that's well. It seems to be a familiar theme on this podcast tonight, doesn't it, and that as well. But right, guys. The relegation pit. I'll tell you what was funny this morning on internal communication channel. You had Killer and Pod still... If Wednesday don't do this and blah blah blah, and I felt we were pretty much down at Preston, but obviously Bristol and blah. You know what makes it so much worse? I did that Yorkshire Ravers thing on Thursday. And the Rotherham lad who were like,
I was like, come on, me and the Wednesday guy on there were on his knees praying for big Steve Evans to do something. And they did. And we still couldn't do it. And done it. It just makes it, I just feel really, I don't really feel like, kind of, I just knew Town won't deliver yesterday. And it's so, yeah. And even though that game obviously was delayed with the guy was all right in the, taking medical emergencies and stuff, he kind of felt just walking up Leeds Road. I didn't even look at their score. I just felt like we were done at that moment psychologically. But yet again, that point that Rotherham got still technically kind of keeps us in it. Although today, Wednesday, they're the one that seems to have took their bull by the horns. Right, we want to get out of it and that as well. But I suppose, I know what you're going to say anyway, but I might as well ask it. Obviously, let me magic this up. Carlos Corberan comes to Hillsborough, secures his playoff spot next week and wins. Huddersfield beat Birmingham. We're out of the bottom three, and I haven't been drinking or sniffing anything, Colin, but am I just talking bollocks on? And any optimism, any hope, mate, or are we done?
It looks that way, doesn't it? You know, we've won 9 games all season. We capitulate at the first sort of sign of a bit of hard work. Or you know, whatever you want to call it. For me, yeah, it's the hope that kills you. I can't see us going and getting anything from Ipswich, regardless of whether they've sealed automatic promotion or they can sign to the playoffs going into that last game. Even if they play a weakened team, they're a very well-oiled, very well-coached machine. You know yourself, I think a couple of years back, we played a weakened team going into our final game against Bristol City, who had nothing to play. And yet we still very comfortably won that game because we were a very well-coached, well-drilled team at that point. And we had players that wanted to play in the playoffs and get that start in the next game. And I suspect they'll be in the same boat. So if we were to stay up from this point, it would be greater than 92-93, it would be greater than last season, it'd be greater than Jacko's. But having seen a few relegated teams in my time, this one is displaying all them same hallmarks of a team that is done. It's clearly done. It needs to be put out of its misery. It needs to be broken up. We need to start again for me.
John, any hopes, mate? You beat the church today on your knees and 5 Hail Marys? Or, to be fair, I think you said a couple of weeks ago to us that you felt it was done. But did you have any hope before that Wednesday game today, or were you finished?
No, not at all. Look, the horse hasn't bolted. The horse is outside being shot. We're done for a day. We need to beat Swansea, and then we need to beat Birmingham, and we probably could have done with a point against Ipswich. But we've lost that game. It's not just how we lost it, it's the manner of how we lost it. We got absolutely battered 4-0. And we'll lose next week to Birmingham. We'll lose narrowly to Birmingham next week. And then that'll be it. I tuned in to watch Sheffield Wednesday today against Blackburn. I thought Sheffield Wednesday were absolutely fantastic. And I'll be honest, I was happy to see him, you know, celebrating at the end, because they've really, really put it in since Danny Rowe came in. It pains me to say that because I hate Sheffield Wednesday. I absolutely despise them as a club. But they, you know, they deserve the praise and they deserve the credit. We don't deserve to get out of this relegation mire. Everything that we've done all season, from the boardroom down to the players, deserves to go down. And, you know, kind of personally, from a selfish point of view, I do hope that we lose next week, because then I won't be hoping anymore, because it is the hope that kills you. Because even though things are bleak, I know that 5 minutes before kickoff against Birmingham next week, I'll be thinking to myself, well, you know, if we win 2-0 today, and then we could go to Ipswich and we could get a 1-0, or we could get a 2-1, then we could stay up. So I kind of just hope that's extinguished for me, because I can't be doing with that hope going into the last 2 games of the season. I just can't.
Yeah.
Colin, I've had a few people say to me they feel a bit short-changed. I know we're kind of maybe swinging back to Brighton right now, but let's not forget, I think when we were 4 points off the relegation zone when he took over, and he did win his first game as well and then get that good draw against Leeds. But it's... I was saying a few weeks ago that I hope he stays. I hope I feel he is the man to turn it around. And to be honest, though, you could really throw that back at me, because you'd say, where's the evidence on that, mate? Third tier football, like in England, you know, look what it's been a bit underwhelming. I've got to be honest, you know, in the last month and kind of with Brighton out as well. But I'm sick and tired of these players just letting us down and that's well. And I honestly think he's as fed up as we are. And the whole thing, as we know, needs ripping up. But for me, he seems to be the man that I just don't want another change, Colin. But that Radio Leeds interview yesterday, I don't know if you've had a chance to hear it yet, but that didn't feel like a man to me who, I mean, again, you never know playing amateur psychologist, but to me, it just felt like a man who probably ain't going to be here if we go down. And obviously, he signed a contract for three-year contract. And, you know, we were 4 points outside the zone coming in. But where do you stand with it on him, Colin? Are you
I'm a bit like you, Cozzy. I'm sick of change for change's sake. Granted, I think a lot of the changes that have taken place had to happen. And the irony is we probably would have been better with Darren Moore in League One than we would be in the Championship, although part of Vale fans and the ones that I ran into in Manchester yesterday would argue otherwise. I ran into some last night in Manchester that had come back from Bolton. I'm erring on the side of I don't think I want to change. I think he'll probably leave. I think he'll quit. I don't think he'll want to do League One with us, unless, of course, they offer to back him properly.
Do you think that's going to help us or hinder us, Colin? If he goes, I mean, obviously, we're back to square one, but in a way, you said, having someone in who knows League One, but we've been that way, haven't we?
I'm a little bit more optimistic for the future if we go down. I think if we'd have gone down 12 months ago without that takeover going through, I was very worried about what relegation might have meant for Huddersfield Town. Now that I feel Nagel will get it right over the long term, I think he's a very, very wealthy man, and he's done it through making good decisions in business. He's probably well aware that he's hired some bad people to advise him, and I'd like to think that he'll take some steps this summer to address that. I was like you, I was quite excited by the Brighton Wrighter appointment. It felt like a bold appointment that hasn't come off, and yeah, I would quite like to keep him around, recruit some players that would fit how he wants to play with better mentality. I don't know what the rules are around sort of getting players on work permits if we are in League One. I'd like us to go back into the German market, because I think the German players seem to approach football with a much more Yorkshire-like mentality. We've seen that before, that kind of, we want to work hard, we want to press, we're fit, we're happy to do double sessions, we're happy to live the right way. I think we've got far too many players that have got used to Warnock's time off, and we don't look fit enough. So I think if we keep Brighton Wrighter, I think he could be a good for us long term. He feels like he's the type of manager that we probably shouldn't have appointed mid-season with a very unfit squad, given that his style of football is all around about pressing and getting in the opposition's faces. Hindsight's a wonderful thing, I guess, but I think longer term, I think I could see how he could work. I don't really trust, if we keep Cartwright in a job, him to pick another manager in League One. I don't know about you.
John, would you keep... Are you too bothered, I suppose, if Andre stays, goes, or...
Yeah. I'd keep him. I'd 100% keep him. I think he's got a fantastic calibre compared to any other manager we could get. I think he's got a better calibre than any single one of our players. And, you know, I did slate him earlier for a couple of his changes where he's going to a 4-2-4. But I think in general, a lot of his tactics have been, you know, under the circumstances, have been understandable and have been astute working with what he's got. I just don't think he's had the players at his disposal. I don't think the players have been fit enough. As I said earlier, I don't think a lot of the players have had the right attitude.
Whether he stays or not, that's a different question. As you say, yesterday he did sound almost resigned to the fact that he's not going to be here. You know, I would have liked him to just come out and say, yeah, of course I'll be here next season, because that's what you want. But I think we need a rebuild next season, and I literally can't think of a better man than him to do the rebuild. You know what I'm saying? Get somebody who knows League One, like Steve Evans, someone like that. I won't want Steve Evans managing my football club.
I'll tell you what I'd like to get, but I mean, if Andre wants to stay, I'd like to see Paul Cook in. I like Paul Cook's football. He's got proven record with Wigan in his division and that as well. Obviously, he's done well with Chesterfield. Yeah, people will say, well, look what happened at Ipswich. But I think I'd like to think his experience. I do like his attitude as well. I think he's like a guy who stands for no shit. But then again, you'd like to think, you know, would...
See, I'd like to see his... I
don't
looks
like you're going to talk, so...
It does.
But he doesn't talk like that, though. He's the champ.
Yes. But I don't like to see this hop in between managers. So England used to do this all the time. Yeah. They used to have someone like Steve McLaren, who's all friendly. I think we should have we need an identity as a football club. So get somebody who sticks to that identity. If we want to play pressing football, keep Brighton Reiter, or get someone in like Brighton Reiter if he goes. Don't be messing about just getting somebody else. And also, we've got to think of, you know, our image as a club. So when you're appointing a manager, it's not just the case of going to a manager and saying, I want you to manage our football team. That manager's got to want to manage our football team. And if you're a manager looking at Huddersfield Town and they've got rid of Andre Brightonwriter and Neil Warnock and Darren Moore and Mark Mackay Fotheringham and Danny Schofield, I've probably forgot someone else as well. You're thinking, why would I go to that basket case of a football club and manage for 3 months? No way. So I think we've got to get some stability and some continuity. And if that means offloading a heap of players and backing Brighton Reiter, then I'm all for it.
Any good news knocking about? I got a pasta yesterday for £4.50, a bargain, and it were burnt half of it. And I think Killer posted earlier on in our thing that I think there were no water or something in the
No milk.
Screen, that's brew. It, right? Yeah, no milk. So these are the real big issues. Forget Brighton Reiter and which division we're in and stuff like that as well. But yeah, it's been a really cheery pod in that as well. But it's, I think, I don't know, just we'll close now, but we'll all have
I've got something talk. Optimistic that I'd say. On, I think going down gives us an opportunity to reset. And if Brighton Reiter doesn't stick around, there's a chance for us to maybe appoint a coach like Ipswich did with Kieran McKenna. And being a big dog in League One, we should attract some good players. We will be one of the bigger clubs down there. There's a good opportunity for us to go down there, reset with a good footballing style of play. And like Ipswich, we might come back up with momentum by playing really good football, because we can get the better players in League One, because we'll be a bigger club down there. We can embed a really good footballing style of play in there and bring that up with momentum up a division if we make a good appointment. Or, you know, Andre might be the one that actually embeds that down there. I think there's some cause for optimism for it. And I think the mess that we've been in, maybe I'd rather not be relegated, but there's an opportunity for a club of our size to reset well in that division if we make some good decisions, which it's hard to sort of say at the moment because we haven't generally made good decisions. But, you know, I'd like to think that a successful businessman like Nagel is good at learning from mistakes, and he's made a fair few this year.
John, it's been misery, mate. I think nine wins, you know, honourable months. It feels like 15 years we've done it since the Danny Ward rocket against Sheffield United, and Warnock were doing his jig on the pitch and everything as well. But any optimism like Colin there that you could see maybe moving forward, or you're just crying into your beer still, mate?
I really do want to be optimistic. Something that's ringing in my head is, I don't know if this was the same woman or not, but I bumped into a woman the day we got relegated from the Premier League, and she said to me, don't worry, we'll come back up next season. With all the parachute payments, we'll come back up. The future's bright. And then I bumped into another woman. I said, I don't know if it's the same woman, but in London, after the playoff final, after we lost to Nottingham Forest, and she said, don't worry, we've got Carlos Colbrand, we'll go up as champions next year. So I hope I don't bump into that woman anytime soon.
But in terms of next season and optimism, there's a small part of me that's worried that we'll, well, there's a big part of me that's worried that we'll go down and we'll struggle and we'll finish 10th or 11th or 12th or something like that. But I suppose things can't get much worse, can they? You know, we've had a pretty horrible run of it. Yeah, but we've had a horrible run of it the past four or five seasons, so maybe it will be nice to go down and, you know, go to some different places, play against some different teams, and hopefully win more games than we lose, because that's what it's all about at the end of the day. It's no fun tuning in every week and just seeing us lose, so hopefully we can win some games.
Colin, that would just be the ultimate, I think, what you said there, because they're in a bit of a run wrap, but I think Danny Rovers are in a better run, so it'd just be like them to get a bit place and go up. But God, honestly, I hate League One with passion, but I mean, we're not down yet, obviously, but looking at that division today, to be fair, there's a lot of Northern teams and stuff, and no, I hope, that's really, I know, Wednesday, God, I don't know, I'm going to get lynched for saying this, I'd rather have Wednesday stay up than Birmingham, to be honest, but if they came down with us and Robin, then obviously it's free and Bolton don't go up, and you know what I'm trying to say, there's some derbies, but I just, yeah, Huddersfield Town, they just, it just sucks out, yeah, I just found it really sad last night, just like walking back. It was absolute silence just walking into town centre, just big, some masses of people just stunned. And yeah, we've seen it before. We've seen so many of these capitulations this season. But I don't think even anyone could believe what we saw yesterday and that as well. And it were hard to believe on it that Swansea had nothing to play for, because there was so much technically better than us. And, you know, it's, I mean, what more do we want? You know, we were saying, oh, you know, Coventry, that's why they beat us, because they were better in the playoffs. And, you know, they're going for the playoffs and what have you and stuff. But there they were. And I did a podcast with a Swansea guy before. I said, look, we've been on the beach. I said, well, hang on a minute. You won 2 home games to nil. He says, no, mate, you get at us. But I says, mate, we're just incapable of getting out of team. But I think my final wish kind of would be for next season. Obviously, we've got another podcast still coming on after Ipswich. But I just want to see some nice football, you know. I just want to see, like, us take the game to teams and that just had happened for so long, and it and that as well. And yeah, I mean, Wagner football obviously was so exciting and stuff, but even probably that one, taking it to teams, certainly won, obviously, in the Premier League. But to a certain extent, you know, it were, kind of got us off our seats, but we just haven't had that as well, have we? And even I enjoyed the one-up adventure for what it is, obviously, what a survival. But I was so jealous of Swansea, just thinking, you know, I know people say it's possession and it's what you do with it, but they were just so comfortable, and all people like passing and moving, and I just thought that would be lovely to watch every week. Just some nice football, and I know people say pressure, but I just don't think the skill set is just there for our guys. And like say reboot, and yeah, maybe we're sat here in 12 months' time on if the worst has happened and we are in League One, but we've had an exciting season and we've come back. But yeah, that's pretty much it, really. I have nothing else to really add. It's going to be obviously a tough week for us all, and the club are going to be interested in our socials. Not so they've only put one message out today, aren't they? And it perhaps a lambasted Redoni, just like picture of him, thanks for your support. But
yeah, looking all sad.
That's how it's going to be in that as well. But there's no, they asked for the support, they asked for people to come, and we did, and they just let us down. So to me, it's like, yeah, the fan base is hurting, we're wounded. Obviously, the worst could come to the worst. It could be, imagine Birmingham puts down again, shared to 2001, I think, was as well. But they just let you down, this team, time after time, and that as well. It's just so destroying, and we're still here. And I think it's next Tuesday, isn't it, when it's the 30-year anniversary of, you know, the stadium and what have you, and that's when it's going to be. I think at this rate, though, there's not going to be many people there, is there? But yeah, we move on. And thanks for everyone's support and podcast. I've got to be honest, I don't know about everyone else, but I was struggling to get to even like speak. I just didn't feel the players deserved even my breath and my energy and our energy, really. But we've put one out tonight. It's been a bit of a, you know, all over the place pod, but a bit like our team, you know what I mean? There's not much structure and But no, thanks for supporting us, guys. Thanks for watching, thanks for listening, and we'll be back after the Birmingham, and hopefully we're still standing, as Elton would say. See you later.
There's a team that is dear to its followers. The colors are bright blue and white. They're a team of renown. They're the pride of the town. And the game of football is their delight. And all the while, upon the field of play, thousands loudly cheer them on the way. Often you can hear them say, who can beat the town today? And then the bells will ring so merrily, and every goal shall be a memory. So town, play up and bring that cup back to Huddersfield. So town, play up and bring the cup back to
Lads, what's your favourite 90th minute goal?
Got to be Heffley against Leeds. A shot from Moy and sliding in at the death, Michael Heffley. Great finish to the game. Shared with my family, only made better by ordering McDonald's via McDelivery afterwards. 3 points, McNugget share box, spot on. Order McDelivery now by the McDonald's app. You in.
At participating restaurants, 18 plus serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
And there it is, that's as good as it gets on this stage. Nissan Townstar EV strikes again. It's an unstoppable van, unstoppable!
Look, just fantastic. You can actually see the ProPilot technology in action. Effortless parallel parking.
It moves with all the confidence that comes with a 5-year warranty.
And with a bench full of all-star van experts, there's real strength in depth here.
That's all-star quality.
Search Nissan Townstar EV and visit your local all-star van centre to see for yourself.
Terms and conditions apply. 5 years or 100,000 miles, whichever comes first.
ProPilot is an advanced driver assist technology. Driver's responsibility to stay alert, drive safely, and control vehicle at all times.